If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Tonight's video is about a family of three who go out camping at a lake in the woods. And what they experience is so terrifying that they run for their lives, leaving everything behind. But that is not the end of their story. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. I still remember being a happy family, once upon a time. Thinking back to years ago, I remember the summer trips we would take as a family. Me, my wife, Lynn, and our 7-year-old son, Kyle. We would travel to the lake, or at least that's what we used to call it. It was an old limestone quarry around 30 minutes away from our small hometown of Blue Ridge, Wyoming. The quarry was deeply cut into a series of top of a large hill, and due to some incorrect planning from the Mountain Quarries Company, a subsidiary of Pacific Portland Cement Company, they dug straight into a pressurized underwater cave system, which resulted in the entire mine flooding, followed soon by its complete shutdown. This left a large, untouched, pristine body of water, spanning at least 200 meters between the straight-cut walls of the quarry. This beautiful, unnatural lake sat on the edge of a large evergreen forest, but close to the main road, with great signal and flat open areas. This now untouched and unclaimed spot became a massive hit in for our town, a new and perfect camping site. My wife absolutely loved the outdoors. She couldn't get enough of it, always pestering me to take her out to the lake for a night under the stars. This was a trait she had passed on to our son. They were always running around outside, catching frogs or bugs, rescuing everything they could get their hands on. I cannot even remember the exact number of baby birds that they would bring home and demand I help them raise. And I could never say no to that pair. One-on-one, maybe. But when they ganged up on me, I always folded faster than wet cardboard. Then it happened. We just spent the night at the lake. The bright morning rays illuminated the sky in a dazzling array of pinks and oranges. Several minutes ago, Lynn left on a morning stroll around the lake. But something was wrong. I saw Lynn run out of the tree line, out of breath, sweating hard, and with this strange look in her eyes. She didn't say anything but run to Kyle, grabbed him into her arms, ran over to our old Jeep Wrangler, and threw him into the back seat. I tried to ask her what was wrong, but she just jumped into the driver's seat and said in a panicked tone, "Get in." I quickly got into the car, and before I could even close the door, she slammed on the brakes. "Damn it, Lynn, what are you doing?" I asked, confused, and a little bit angry, since she just abandoned all of our camping equipment. She paused for a moment and said in a quiet but panicked voice, "We just need to get out of here." "Why?" I asked, confused. She would never act like this normally, so I honestly had no idea what to make of this. She stammered out, "It was in the..." Then everything went dark. I awoke to find myself lying on a soft surface in a rhythmic beep. 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 Next my right ear. My whole body ached and I struggled to open my eyes. Finally, they cracked open, letting in the blinding white light. The beeping got louder and faster. Then I felt something cold grab my wrist in a low whisper next to me. "Calm down, Mr. Finch. You're okay. You're safe." Eventually, my eyes adjusted to the light showing a young woman leaning over me, dressed in a classic nurse's outfit. I tried to speak, but I couldn't say a word. Something was in my throat. I started to panic. I had to get this out of my throat or I would surely suffocate. The beeping grew louder and erratic as I struggled. My arms felt like jelly as they reached up and grabbed at my face. I felt this horrid thick tendril going down my throat, pulsing as it forced something into my lungs. The nurse screamed something I couldn't make out, but I felt more hands pressing me down, trying to stop me, and that damned beeping just kept getting faster. I finally managed to yank out that damn thing trying to slither down my throat, followed by unimaginable pain and a sharp pinch at the left arm, and then darkness. I awoke again, but this time my vision was a lot clearer. I could see that I was strapped down with thick padded cuffs to a clean white hospital bed. At least that horrid tendril was gone from my throat, and that beeping was a slow, steady rhythm again. I could now tell that that beeping came from my heart rate monitor. I called out, but my voice felt wrong. It was rough, and it hurt to speak. The same young nurse from before slowly entered my view, hovering above me. "Well there, no talking. You damn near tore out your vocal box when you had your little stunt earlier," she said in a stern but kind voice. She paused for a second and spoke. "You're in the Blue Ridge Hospital. Your car was T-boned on the Blackwater Road just outside of town. You're lucky to be alive. Your spleen ruptured, and both your right leg and arm were broken in the collision." I tried to ask a question, but she just shushed me. "No questions now. Rest, and the doctor will come talk with you later." I blinked, then felt a severe drowsiness hit me, and then the darkness overtook me again. The next few days were a nightmare. The nurses were kind, but they refused to tell me anything about the crash or what happened to my wife or son. Eventually, though, the doctor came to check up on me. "Ah, good. Your vitals seem fine. Your bones have a good clean break, and it's healing nicely. You should be back on your feet in no time, Mr. Finch," he stated in a clinical tone. "I don't care about that. Where's Lynn? Where's Kyle?" I demanded. A look of sadness overcame the doctor's face. "Mr. Finch, please, you're still recovering. We can—" "Damn it, Doc, I need to know, please," I begged. He let out a short sigh. "Mr. Finch, your son is fine. Actually, we're not really sure, but he barely suffered any injuries. Just a few lacerations, a mild concussion, and a sprained shoulder." A massive weight left my chest, and I could finally, after days of torment, relax. "He's fine," I smiled. Then as soon as the smile came, it fled as a dark, though, wormed its way into the forefront of my mind, and a pit formed in my stomach as a dread filled my heart. The beeping started to get erratic again, as I stammered out, "What about Lynn?" The doctor steeled himself, then said the next words in the most professional way possible. "I'm sorry, Mr. Finch. She suffered a severe head injury, which led to a hemorrhagic stroke. She passed away last night at 7:32 p.m. I'm very sorry for your loss." I felt everything go cold, and all the color drained from the world. The next few days flew in a dark malaise. I couldn't focus on anything, and I lost my drive to even try. Then, next event I couldn't even really remember was the day that Kyle came into my room. "Daddy!" he yelled, and all but threw himself onto my bed. His weight came crashing into me, and I could feel my body protecting against the pain, but he hugged me tightly, his warm tiny arms grabbing tightly into mine. Even though the pain on my side was almost unbearable, I wouldn't even think for a second of pushing him off me. Instead, I wrapped my good arm around him and pulled him tighter to me. Then he said, "I've missed you. Those mean old ladies wouldn't let me go see you or Mom." Those words stung even more than the injuries. I fought back tears as I held them, but then something in me snapped back into place, and the cold darkness flew away. Don't worry, son. We'll get you back home, I promise.
Daddy, I'm so glad to see you. But what happened to Mama? Those mean ladies won't tell me anything. They just seem sad whenever I ask about it.
I took a deep breath and said with tears straining my eyes, Kyle, God needed Mom for a very special mission. So he called her back to heaven, so she could become one of his angels. Kyle seemed confused, but asked sincerely,
When can we go to heaven too?
Not yet, but one day when it's our time, we'll get called up too and we could go see her again.
But when will that be? I want to see her now.
Kyle complained. I hugged closer. I'm sorry, son, but we won't be able to for a long time. My son was a very smart kid, and by that point he caught up on what I was saying, and I could see tears in his eyes as he started to cry. I just held him close enough till he eventually fell asleep in my arms. The next few months passed in a blur, but I had now regained my drive. I fought through the physical therapy and eventually was back on my feet. Months passed and I managed to adjust and take care of Kyle alone. It was hard, and I missed Lynn every day, but humans are good at adjusting. With my demanding job, I had to hire a maid to clean the house, and started to order takeout more often than was probably healthy for me and Kyle. In the blink of an eye, a year had passed. Kyle was the greatest child you could ever imagine. I really struggled to get through this year, but he was different, stronger. He would help me, make his own lunch when I forgot it, take the bus to and from school, and his grades never even dropped. He truly was an amazing kid. Then early one morning while I was getting breakfast ready, he ran into the kitchen, then approached me. I could tell he wanted to ask me something, but he didn't know how to approach it.
Good morning, buddy. So what's up? I gently probed. He replied,
Well, you're very busy. I wanted to ask if we could, well, you know, okay, if we go back to the lake again.
My smile froze. The lake? I questioned.
Yeah, you've been away a lot, and I've been trying to play with my friends, but it's just not the same. We used to go all the time, and well, I'd really like to go again.
I paused for a moment and thought to myself, Wow, I'm a terrible dad. This kid used to go out every day with his mother. They love the outdoors. It's been a whole year, and I've been so busy at work to even take him out once. I could feel my heart breaking, so I said, Sure, let's go on Saturday. His smile brightened the room. I had not seen him this happy in a long time, and it even lightened my own mood. Although the second he left to go to the bus, a dark dread crept into my heart. The lake. I honestly never wanted to go back there. There was too many memories there, too much I didn't want to face. But if it was to keep that boy smiling, I'd do it again. The rest of that week went by quickly. I bought a whole new set of camping gear, packed snacks, and everything you would need to make some s'mores, all the while mentally preparing myself to go back to the lake. Then the fatal day arrived. We woke early, 6 a.m., fumbled everything into the car, then made the short drive to the lake. It was a bright, clear day, especially at 30 degrees Celsius with the cool wind that blew through the trees, rustling the leaves. It was just by all accounts a perfect day. We drove up to the old mining operation. Its hard-packed dirt and chiseled limestone walls looked over the dark yet surprisingly clean water of the lake. I was always surprised how the water never got stagnant, even though it always sat still. That day was actually fun. It felt like old times again. We ran through the forests, catching every bug we could find. We even found an old slimy toad underneath a small berry bush. Too soon, the golden rays of the sun started to creep behind the hills in the distance. I was completely exhausted,
keeping up with an 8-year-old is hard work. I cannot understand how they fit so much energy into a small body. So we headed back into the car and started to unpack the tents. Of course, we didn't set up right at the edge of the water. That would be slightly silly, as I would hate to wake up and plunge straight into the water first thing in the morning. So we headed a ways away from the lake. We set up camp in a small clearing in between some old firs. It was better to set up slightly outside the old mining area, as the dirt was so hard packed there, you struggled to hammer in the tent's pegs. We gathered some large stone and built a roaring campfire. We had snacks, ate s'mores, then a full moon hung brightly in the sky. I could see Kyle's eyes slowly droop closed. I gently scooped him into my arms and carried him into his tent. As I tucked him into his sleeping bag, he softly said to me, half asleep,
"Daddy, thanks. Today almost felt like Mom was back."
Those words stung my heart, and I knew he would have to come back to the lake more often. He was a great kid, but that didn't mean he wasn't missing Lynn, and I really needed to do a better job. I slowly crept out of his tent, making as little noise as possible, quickly smothering the fire, then crawling into my own tent, and as soon as my head hit the pillow, I was out. I jolted awake.
"Daddy, quick over here!"
I heard Kyle call from a distance. I rubbed my eyes, still groggy. Kids, it should really be impossible for them to have this much energy. I slowly unzipped myself from the sleeping bag, and I slowly pushed out of the flap of the tent. It was still midnight. The kid basically got 2 hours of sleep and is out and about already. But I can't really blame him, though. It's been a year since any real outing, after all. I grabbed my flashlight, flicked it on, sending out a thin beam of light into the dark woods, and headed out into the cool night air. I didn't really need the flashlight. It was a full moon and most of the forest was visible, but it never hurts to have one, I guess. I was about to call out when I heard it again, even further away.
"Daddy, quick over here!"
He called out from the direction of the lake. I slowly trudged my way through the underbrush. "Kyle, where are you?" I called out.
"Daddy, quick over here."
I finally emerged from the tree line, looking out over the lake. Its water pitch black under the moonlight. And then I heard a splash, a giggle, and I saw Kyle leisurely paddling at the lake. The lake was deep, and I mean really deep. It's an old mine, so it easily went 50 meters down. I never let Kyle ever swim in the lake, just to be safe.
"Kyle, what do you think you're doing? Get out of there!"
I called out over the water. He just giggled and said playfully,
"Daddy, quickly over here!"
I was furious, and I was just about to jump in and drag him back to shore when I noticed it.
"Daddy, quickly over here!"
he said again. The same words, said in the same way, exactly the same way, like straight from a tape recorder. I slowly moved the beam of the torch onto the boy. He looked just like Kyle, exactly the same. Maybe I'm just being crazy. It must just be him finally letting loose after his feelings bottled up for so long, I told myself.
"Come on, Kyle, let's get you dried off," I called out again.
The boy cocked his head to the side, staring up at me and said,
"Dad, quickly over here!"
His bright green eyes reflected back the light from the torch, and I froze. Kyle had brown eyes. The thing in the water lifted its hand up out of the water, becoming at me.
"Daddy, quickly over here!"
it said, copying my son perfectly. Then I heard a voice in the distance.
"Daddy, are you looking for me?"
I froze for a brief moment, then ran. I bursted through brushed, trampled plants along the way. But I didn't care. I ran with everything I had back to the camp. I burst through the tree line and saw Kyle's head poking out of his tent. He was rubbing his eyes, his brown eyes. I ran towards him, yanking him out of the tent, and sprinted for the car. I threw Kyle into the back seat and grabbed the front door.
Daddy, quickly over here.
I heard a faint call in the distance, and a pair of glowing green eyes staring from the lake in the distance. I jumped in and hit the gas. 20 minutes later, we were home. Kyle was confused and terrified.
Daddy, what's wrong? Why do we have to go?
I looked over at him and said, It's nothing, just the lake. Well, we can't go there anymore. I think we need to find a new place to camp. He looked up at me confused and said, Fine, I'm going back to sleep. He gave me a hug and turned to go to his bedroom. But as he left, I saw something. Something faint. Now I'm sitting here in my bedroom typing up this post. Thoughts swirling in my head because as Kyle entered his bedroom, he opened it with his right hand, not his left hand like he usually would. And for a moment I saw a flash of green in his eyes. I am no longer sure if that thing across the hall is my son, and if not, how do I get him back?